Hello, I am Fred King, and I am about to record a series of records, tapes, I should say, of my life, my memoirs. And that the reason is I've been prevailed upon by my great-grandchildren. Please tell us how things were when you were a boy. And after thinking about it for a while, I've decided I'll humor them, and maybe I'd like to hear my own voice again or something. Anyway, when I first saw the light of day here in the beautiful city of Brooklyn, New York, across the river from Manhattan, there I was when I first saw the light of day at 120 6th Street, which is down in the slum section of Brooklyn then, and still is, I guess, about 150 feet from the gurgling Gowanus Canal. They used to call it gurgling, the baseball commentators about the Brooklyn Dodgers on the gurgling Gowanus, and it doesn't gurgle at all because it's very polluted and is stagnant. And anyway, that was 150 feet away. Now, this house was owned by my grandfather. My grandfather, Frederick Rozek. I was named Frederick, and his son, Frederick, and I'm another Frederick, and he owned that, and my dad and mother rented one of the apartments in it, and my mother's sister and her husband was in there also. That's where I started, in Brooklyn. Sometime later, we moved to 5th Street, and I remember 5th Street. The only thing I remember about it is the Wild West Show. Buffalo Bill's Wild West Show was on a open lot across the street. And it was a fantastic thing with Indians shouting and battling and cowboys roping things and so forth. It was quite a show. And, of course, Wild Bill was quite a showman, Buffalo Bill was. I remember that part of early Brooklyn. Many years later, I've been to Brooklyn, too, but that was the early part. I think we moved from 6th Street to 20th Street. And then 20th, I remember, well, I don't remember, but I just heard about it. Anyway, 20th Street was a tenement house where grandfather owned also. And that was very noteworthy from the fact in the backyard, there were 20 outhouses in a row because there were no toilets in the houses. People had to go down the stairs to the backyard where the outhouses were. Well, one more thing I wanted to tell you about downtown Brooklyn was there near the Gowanus Canal and near 6th Street where I was born, there was a baseball field, one of the original ones for the Brooklyn team. It was called, I think, Washington Field. That's where the Dodgers, or the Robins, they called them once. They called them the Brooklyn Dodgers because they called them Trolley Dodgers. That's why they call them. But anyway, this site there was called Washington Field, I believe, because that's where Washington fought the Battle of Long Island in the Revolution. And he was camped there in that area along the Gowanus Canal when the British started landing troops over from Staten Island. They landed at Gravesend Bay up there, and then they came down Brooklyn, and of course Washington was a good general. He slowly retreated, and during the night one night he got across the East River to Manhattan, and then a few days later he escaped off northward across the Harlem River, and so he left New York City, Manhattan and all that, to the British General Howe, and Howe kept it as his headquarters for several more years. He was encamped there in New York. Well, before I get any farther, I should also tell you great-grandchildren of mine who my father was and my mother was. Let's start first with my mother. My mother was an immigrant. She was an immigrant from Germany, and she came across to the United States all alone. She came all alone from way off in Ostpreußen, Germany, all alone. Ostpreußen is, well, it's the western part of Germany. After World War One, it was isolated from the rest of Germany. It was partly, some of the spoils of war went to Poland, and there was a Polish carter in between there. Anyway, my grandfather, my mother's father was a tailor, and he was a tailor there in Königsberg in Germany, and he came originally to New York, and when he earned enough money, he wanted to bring his family over, so he sent what money he earned, and there was enough for one to come over, and the one was my mother, who was the oldest. She was 12 years old. She had never gone to school at all. She could not, read no English, could not speak English or anything. My grandfather met her here in New York, and she started working as a servant girl in some of the places, and they both earned money together and sent enough money, so the next child came over and the next child. So finally the whole family was over here. She was 12 years old, though, to come all that way from Germany, across Germany, from Ostpreußen to Hamburg, where she got on a immigrant ship and stayed in the steerage all the way across the Atlantic. She was 12 and could speak no English. Since after she got to New York, however, she learned English and speaking it, and she learned to write it also. And all her life she was able to read, and she read only non-fiction stuff, and I'm very proud of all she accomplished. Go to my father now. My father was in a different situation in that his family was quite affluent. My father was born on the island, the British island of Barbados. And Barbados today is a wonderful, wonderful resort for the British population. They come there for their vacations. Queen Anne, Princess Anne, I should say, spent her honeymoon there. We met many British people the time that we were there on a visit also. But Dad's father emigrated from England. He was a printer, and he established his printing business in Barbados, and he printed everything at that time, including the newspaper. Of course, I guess my father learned the printing business to some, but he had one brother, Brother Herbert. And Brother Herbert came to the U.S. and graduated from Cornell University as a civil engineer, I guess, and he went back to Barbados and became the engineer in charge of all the roads there, I believe. Anyway, well, let's see how Mother and Dad got to find each other. Well, it happened this way. Mother heard about a summer job out on Long Island at a boarding house, and she got on the train and went out there to what is now Hampton Bays, Long Island, but at those days it was called Good Ground. And this job was at a boarding house, and she walked from the railroad station a mile or a mile and a half or so to see where old Grandmother Bellows was running this boarding house. Well, she was not able to sell herself, and she did not get the job, and she sorrowfully walked back to the railroad station. But she had met a girl there about her own age, or a little younger maybe, about 15 years old or so, and her name was Marion, and it was Marion Bellows. Also, well, she and Mother got real friendly and all, and after Mother had left, Marion went back to her mother and argued that this was a wonderful girl and she should hire her as a waitress for the summer, and finally Mother Bellows said, okay, go get her. So Marion got on her bicycle and rode back to the railroad station where Mother was waiting for a train, and she brought her back, and so she got the job for the summer. And that's how So how did she get to meet Dad? Well, Dad and another of his young unmarried cronies from Jersey City had come out to stay in a boarding house to have a fling and go swimming and all that business, and they did. Now, of course, Grandma Bellows' husband, old Captain Bellows, Lonnie Bellows, Alonzo called Lonnie, he operated a small sailing ship called the Dunbar there, and he would transport the people in the boarding house across the bay, Shinnecock Bay, all across Shinnecock Bay, to the outer, the Isler sandbanks that ran up and down the coast so they could swim in the ocean. So this was a daily trip he made up in there. Anyway, Dad was there, and he met Mother there. And I guess the romance started from there, and we don't know how the rest of it progressed, except sooner or later they got married, and Mildred was born first, and my sister, a year before I was. Mildred was born on June 27th, 1911, I think it was. Now, before I go any farther, I should tell more about my father, Dad, and his early life in Barbados. He was a regular boy along with his brother, and they had a lot of fun playing and doing things. He told me a lot of stories a lot of times, and I've forgotten most of them. The only one I remember in particular, one of the tricks they used to do, they used to dig worms. They had chickens, you know, everybody had chickens. They used to dig worms, and they would tie a long string on a worm, and then they'd throw it in a chicken yard, and so the chicken would grab the worm and swallow it, and then they'd pull on the string and pull it out again on them. That was a boy's trick, wasn't it? I've done a few things like that, I suppose, too. Well, anyway, Dad's father, with his printing business, which I mentioned, got to be quite affluent there. They had a huge, huge house on River Road, Barbados, and they had 28 servants. And the servants were the dark-skinned people of the island. And I don't know what the name for them is now, but they were a mixture of the original Indians that were there and some Spanish blood and Portuguese blood, some African-American, I guess, also. So they have a certain kind of a person. They're very, very nice. We've met them when we were in Barbados. They had 28 servants in that house, and the story was no white men never did any physical work themselves. The natives did everything, and they felt very resentful if anybody did any work, any mail. That's some of the stories we've got, of course, from my father. Dad learned to swim at an early age. He claims that they just threw him in the water from a boat or something. He had to swim. I don't quite believe that anyway. But at Barbados, it's the most beautiful salt water and the most beautiful sandy beaches and the most colorful scenery all over the place. And the open ocean where Bridgetown in Barbados was with the open ocean, and on the protected side, on the Caribbean side, there is today many, many, many wonderful hotels where the British people come to vacation. I think there was counted 95 hotels the last I knew. But it's a beautiful, beautiful island. Dad came to America. I don't know the whole story of it, but I assume that he and his dad got to some kind of a problem between them, and we don't know. Maybe they argued about something. Maybe he did something that he shouldn't have done, and anyway, but it ended up that he did not go to college like his brother, who went to Cornell, but he came to the United States, I suppose with a certain fund of money or something, to seek his fortune or something like that. And that's how he happened to be in Jersey City when the times come when he did meet Mother Marie Rozek, who was an immigrant from Germany. They met out there on good ground, Long Island. Well, now I remember one more place in Brooklyn that we lived in before we moved to Connecticut. We lived in a place, I remember the name now is Irving Avenue. Where it is in Brooklyn, I still haven't found out. But I remember it. It was, I can remember sitting on the front steps with someone. They were brownstone steps running down about 20 feet or so. And I can remember the backyard. The backyard, which had fences on three sides all around, as most all of the places in Brooklyn were like that. But I can remember the itinerant singers that would come playing on their instruments, violin and accordion and so forth, and they would sing, and then we'd wait, and the people in the building would throw out coins to them. I remember that, and I remember the parties occasionally they had where our relatives, Uncle Charlie and Uncle Fred. Uncle Fred, also Fred Rosack, he's my godfather. And my Uncle Charlie, my Uncle Leslie, and my dad, they used to always play pinochle together. I remember that very well. And I remember, Uncle Fred bringing me, a cane. I remember in that time, a little small cane with an amber top on it. I just remember that. And I also remember, this particular time when my sister Mildred locked herself in the bedroom all alone, and she wouldn't come out, and they couldn't get the door open. And my mother was frantic, and they were running around shouting and hollering, and finally they were prying the door with a paper knife. This paper knife was made out of bronze. Uncle Leslie was a bronze worker. In fact, he worked on those big bronze doors at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. But this bronze paper knife, they were trying to pry the door open, and they broke the tip of it off. And today, my sister Mildred still has that bronze they're still broken off, of course. But when they did get it open, they found Mildred in there with my father's revolver, holding it in her hands. And I don't know what the outcome of that was, but nobody ever saw that revolver again. I guess it had a final resting place of some kind or other. Well, let me tell you now about how we came to move to Connecticut. Dr. Dugan, he was the man who delivered me, and he was apparently an efficient doctor, and my sister and I had been very, very sickly. We had had pneumonia. I think I had pneumonia twice, and we had both had both kinds of measles. We had diphtheria. We had whooping cough. We had scarlet fever and everything in between time. But little Freddie got rickets, and rickets, of course, is lack of vitamin D. We've had no sunshine. My folks did not know it was proper to get out into the sunshine for the children to get enough of that vitamin D. Anyway, Dr. Dugan said, "Why don't you go to the country where these children can get some sunshine?" And you know, they did. They bought a farm. They bought a farm up in Connecticut, in the town of Colebrook. It's still there, that farm. I saw it this year, 1997. And the farm was about 18 acres. It had a barn on the west side of the road, and a farmhouse was on the east side of the road, a small bit of property there, and a brook behind it. And that barn was a huge barn, with a hay barn attached, and attached to that was a cow barn and horse barn where we had the horse and the cow both, and a chicken coop, and all those stuff, and a lot of vegetable garden and fruit trees. Well, there were currant bushes, and I'll tell you about that later, the currant bushes, and, there was an apple orchard just north of the house, which my folks harvested very, very carefully for winter use. I'll get into that a little bit later now. The farm on the west side was bordered by Sandy Brook, and Sandy Brook is a nice brook of about 10 feet across and runs up into the town of Colebrook. And to this day, it is still stocked with trout by the state of Connecticut. In those days, it was only native brook trout. The Salvelinus fontinalis was native there. And that's how I got started in my fishing. At the first year, with the help of Preston Deming, my neighbor, a boy of my age, a quarter of a mile to the south on the Deming farm, Preston showed me how to make a fishing pole. I called it in those days a pole because it was just a piece of sapling of either willow or maybe maple, and probably about 10 foot of line wound around the tip with a hook on it and all. He showed me how to put a worms on a hook and catch trout. And the first one was on the where the brook crosses the side road in back of our house. I caught the first 8-inch trout that first year, and then I caught 3 more. I caught 4 trout the first year. And the second year up there, I caught 25 trout. What an accomplishment. Preston Deming and I ranged up and down the Sandy Brook in those days and fished this place and that place and all over. And we had an awful lot of fun together. We had a lot of fun doing all kinds of things. I'll get into that later, maybe. Well, I'll get back to describing a little more about the house. I'm kind of disjointed, but I try to get, every once in a while I think of something else, and so I better shove that in. What I wanted to tell about was the water system at the house, and it was unique, very unique. Old man Chapman was the man who we bought the house from. Dad and Mom, when I say we, look, I had nothing to do with it. Anyway, he had somehow or other procured a small triangle of land under the side of the road going up to Eno Hill. And he dug a good well there, nice water, and he sent it down to the house. He piped it down, and that was maybe 400 or 500 feet away from the house then, and he piped it all the way down underground. Now, the trouble was he didn't own the land in between, and he must have gotten permission from old Homer Deming, who had strawberry field there, and he must have buried it good and deep because it didn't freeze in the wintertime that I remember anyway, and must have been down a couple of feet then at least. But it never froze up all that time, and the water was just marvelous. It just ran gravity feed right out there, no pump, no anything, just ran out of our kitchen faucet. We just have to wash the dishes and rinse them, hold them underneath it. I helped with washing the dishes and drying dishes. Mildred and I got into a lot of chores working there, all kinds of. I used to split kindling, you know. I think my dad showed me how to do that, and for the stove, in most of the months, the only way we got heat was from a kitchen stove, a regular old kitchen stove. But in the wintertime, I usually closed the kitchen off, and there was a great big chunk stove in the living room. The living dining room, I guess you'd call it. Great big pot-bellied stove. In the wintertime, it used to get pure red. Red. And, of course, I got the job of cutting the kindlings, and Dad split the bigger ones. The woodshed was just chock full of wood all of the time it's a long winter, you know. The time I remember, once in particular, when my brother, my brother was born on the farm in 1917, and he must have been about a year old or something or other about that time when he was climbing on the wood that's piled up alongside the stove, and all of a sudden he flopped over and fell into the stove. That red glowing stove made a burn from his elbow down to his hand, one great big blister. He don't remember it, but I remember it. He cried a little bit, you know, that time. Well, I could tell another story about my brother on the farm there. He must have been a year and a half. When I, it was summertime. It must have been the next summer after he burned his arm. But he had on rompers. If you people know what rompers are, it's a sort of all one piece suit. And one of the first things that little boys and little girls wear when they're growing up, after they get rid of the diapers, you know. Well, Ed was climbing. He climbed to the top of a ladder. We had this ladder. My dad had this long ladder, maybe 15 foot long at least, leaning up against the pippin tree. South of the house, there was this tremendous pippin tree, and pippins produce a large, large apple that are just wonderful. I guess they made applesauce out of it, and they made pie out of it, of course. And it was a wonderful thing to have a pippin tree in your yard. Well, they had propped it up against the tree, and, of course, a little boy, well, they do, climbed the ladder, of course. And he climbed up. Nobody noticed him. All of a sudden, somebody noticed, where's little Albert? And he was at the top of the ladder, and the very top. And they try to tell him to come down, and they're scared. Mother was frantic with him up there all alone, and so he tried to turn around and come down, and the corner of his rompers, you know, they were short-legged, and just about the knee, he got caught in the rung of the ladder, or the top of the ladder somewhere, and he couldn't get it off, and he couldn't move or anything, and so they carefully told him, do this, do this, do this, and he finally got it off and came down. He don't remember that one either, but that was one of the things. I bet you Mildred remembers it. Now, what else? Oh, I better tell you about the gypsies. The gypsies, well, one day in the summertime, all of a sudden Mother realized there's a lot of wagons going by, and she went out to look, and sure enough, there was about 20 wagons as far as her eye could see, all the way down to near Deming's house was all wagons coming, and it was a team of gypsy wagons traveling north up to Massachusetts. And she was frantic, hollering, looking for Freddie and looking for Mildred. And they were on the other side of the road. And in between was this great team carriages, like I don't know what they'd call them, that they call them anyway, the gypsies had, where they lived in and brought all their belongings and everything. There was a steady stream of them. She couldn't get over, and finally she could see us standing there watching over there, and she prayed all the time, I guess, that nothing would happen to us, because she remembers from over in Europe, the gypsies had a terrible reputation from stealing little boys and little girls, and holding them for ransom. And nothing happened. They didn't want us. I guess they didn't. We didn't look very wealthy or something, probably. But that was an experience. A real nice experience, however, was the current experience. I promised you I would tell you that one. Well, one day, Mother and Dad, I think it was on a Sunday, too, because Dad was home, and they couldn't find little Freddie, and they were hollering and hollering all around the place. And you know, little Freddie heard them all right, but he pretended he didn't hear them, because he was sitting down and sitting on the ground and eating as fast as he could red currants, and even green currants in between, underneath the currant bushes. I had this yen for little currants, and I still do today. I use red currants on my egg pancakes. My electric jelly is just red currant jam. I think I should pause here. We're getting near the end of this tape number one. And be sure that you rewind it so that you'll have to rewind it so that the next time it's used, it'll be at the beginning. Let's go to take two now.